Major Jake Gatsby for Valor Extraordinary.
That's right. Could it all be true?
F. Scott Fitzgerald's romantic drama set in the roaring 20s explodes on the big screen in Baz Luhrmann's The Great Gatsby. Just one of the hot entertainment items we'll be talking about on this official Plugged In podcast. I'm Bob Hoos, sitting in for Bob Smithhauser, and here to discuss Gatsby and all his charms is Plugged In's own charming chief, Bob Waliszewski. Hi, Bob.
Howdy, old sport.
After that, we'll be talking about a certain BBC doctor who loves his TARDIS.
Exactly.
To tell us all about this bona fide sci-fi icon, we'll be turning to Plugged In's own TV mad scientist, senior associate editor, Paul Acey. Hey, Paul.
Hi, how's it going?
Today's podcast is sponsored by Cedarville University, celebrating 125 years of inspiring greatness. Cedarville University is a Christ-centered learning community. It's also recognized nationally for rigorous academics, which is a pretty powerful combination. Find out more at cedarville.edu. Now, let's see what's in the news.
And now, here's a little something we like to call culture clips.
Well, my culture clip isn't technically a culture clip, or at least yet, but it's something on my heart, and in fact, it's something that I tweeted about this week, and it's this. I've been watching, as you guys have too, a steady progression of Tyler Perry films over the past few years, and there's a whole lot of things to say about them. Things like they don't scream for the press, his production company has certainly become a cash cow, it's an incredibly well-oiled machine, there seems like there's always this faith component in his films, and although none of his films is fireproof or courageous, squeaky clean, I think we've all felt they've been seemingly getting better and better. Now, his Madea films in the past have left a lot to be desired, but when we got to Meet the Browns, The Family That Prays, and Why Did I Get Married, there was just more and more of this positive content and less of the negative. And then there came that recent Temptation Confessions of a Marriage Counselor. Again, not a perfect film, but a great cautionary tale about the destructiveness of infidelity. So there's this temptation to keep thinking, wow, PG-13, but so was Courageous, so was October Baby, so was Home Run. Hey, let's not worry about the rating for now. If it's a Tyler Perry film, they're getting better. Let's kind of give them the benefit of the doubt. But I just saw People's. It's the number four film in the nation this past week. I would just put it this way. It makes even the Madea films look like something we might see on the Disney Channel. Very raunchy, very juvenile, no faith content to speak of. There's even a, well, I won't even get into the specifics of the scene. Again, very, very raunchy. The bottom line for me, as we always say, check out the full reviews before you go, even if it's a Tyler Perry film.
Well, and I think you're absolutely right. That's one of the dangers of having this ready-made following that'll go to just about anything he puts out there.
Yeah.
And that is the fact that sometimes it may not be as upright as we'd like to see.
Yeah, that's true. You know, speaking of peoples, we peoples are prone to distractions at times. And the latest proof of that, how is that for a segue?
Oh, here, let me put my cell phone down. Okay, go ahead.
Let me tell you about distractions.
Go ahead.
The latest proof of that has come from a study that was done on a variety of students, high school students, middle school students, college students.
Mm-hmm.
And these researchers watched these kids as they were supposedly studying something that was very important for them for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
The researchers would just sort of stand in the background and watch what they did. And they found that it wasn't 2 minutes before a lot of these students were going onto Facebook. They were going to check in to text message one of their friends or what have you. They found that of that 15 minutes time that was supposed to be studying something very important, only 65% of that time was actually spent studying.
Yeah.
We live in this very multitasking generation where we think we can do so many different things at once.
Yep.
And a lot of times it doesn't prove to be true.
And it's certainly spilling over into the adult workplace, too.
Yeah.
I remember reading an article not long ago where they were suggesting that 60% of the distractions at work are now
people checking Facebook,
social networking,
or taking
sort of
an email
things.
Of personal nature or whatever. Paul, let me ask this, and I'm serious. Is it possible that some of the kids were actually using their smartphones, though, to study, to maybe go online and find additional information along the subject, or did they study that, do you know?
You know, I think that they had a good way of keeping track exactly what they were studying. Okay. They were close
so
enough
that's just
to
waste of time.
It's just wasted time. And you know, when you talk about those workplace distractions, I know that when you talk about the interpersonal communications, mm-hmm. me just peeking over the cubicle wall just to bother you, that adds in yet more distraction for you.
Yeah, no kidding. I always think of you as a distraction. But anyway, those stories and others like them are published every Monday in our Information Culture Clips report, which you at home can access by clicking the Culture Clips link on our website. And we can also deliver it straight to your email inbox. All you have to do is just take a minute to subscribe to the free Plugged In e-newsletter. Either way, your first stop should be PluggedIn.com.
It's a strange coincidence.
What is?
The fact that Gatsby's house is just across the bay.
It's no coincidence. He bought that house to be near her. He threw all those parties hoping she'd wander in one night. He constantly asked about Daisy. I was just the first person that knew her.
All that for a girl he hasn't seen in 5 years. And now he just wants me to invite her over to tea. The modesty of it.
Kind of takes your breath away, doesn't it?
You've all heard of The Great Gatsby. Probably many of us have even read the book in our high school English class way back when. But for those out there who might have missed that class that day, BW, why don't you set the table for us? Who is Gatsby and what makes him so great?
Well, I'm still not sure what makes him so great, but I sure can say who he is. In Fitzgerald's novel, as well as the book, he is a very wealthy, mysterious neighbor on Long Island. He throws extravagant weekend parties full mm-hmm. of flappers, fireworks, and booze, and we find out he doesn't really even like parties all that much. How do we find that out? Because his neighbor, Nick Carraway, a young wannabe writer who lives in more of a shack next to the mansion, finally meets this enigma of a neighbor, and he finds out that Gatsby's been throwing these parties because he wants to reconnect with a girl from his past, who happens to be Nick's cousin, by the way, which is interesting, but she also happens to be a married woman.
Mm-hmm. Well, clearly this particular version of the story, Baz Luhrmann's, has been updated for sort of a modern 21st century audience. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's filmed in 3D, it's got Jay-Z on the soundtrack, but the question is, was this a complete overhaul, or could a Cliff Notes hungry kid pass an essay test just by watching this thing?
Boy, that's a tough question. I've read Gatsby 3 times, I have to admit. And it's one of my very favorite books. And I was actually really surprised how faithful the movie was to the book. It really stayed pretty close to at least the words in the book. And it even brought in some of Fitzgerald's language, which I really appreciated. Now, to say that it nails the book exactly right, I don't think would be correct, because a lot of subtext is missing here. The movie actually feels a little more sincere than the book. The book is just coated in irony and that mm-hmm. type of thing. So I think you'd be able to pass, maybe not an A+.
maybe miss some of the emotional context.
Exactly.
Huh? You know, I know all three of us have seen the movie, and it's a pretty visually stunning film. You know, especially I thought in the first half an hour, maybe to 40 minutes, it was just this extravaganza of color and everything.
Sure.
And after that, I thought it sort of bogged down a little bit. For me personally, BW, did you like the movie better than me?
I usually answer the bogged down question by how many times I look at my watch. Uh-huh. And this one I didn't. And so the bogged down wasn't my particular problem with
the
movie.
2 hours and 22 minutes worth of film.
It was a long one, though. But I wasn't finding myself, you know, 5 minutes in looking at my watch that I sometimes do on some movies thinking, it must have been an hour. Oh, no, it's only been 5 minutes. It's going to be a really long one.
Now, I was just thinking about the film, though, in the context of, I don't know, when we think of the 20s, we think of a fairly innocent time, you know, bathing suits down to their knees and no alcohol because it's prohibition and all that. But the movie certainly has some raw moments.
I like to come away from a movie with characters to root for, and most of the time with a happy ending. Or if there's not a happy ending, there's a great, great cautionary tale in the mix. Now, this one does have a bit of a cautionary tale. And one can even argue that wealth that's put on a pedestal is shown to be rather empty. But there really isn't a character to root for by the time the credits roll. It's not Gatsby. It's not Nick. It's not Tom. It's not Myrtle. It's not not Daisy. I mean, you can go down the list of major characters. Nobody do I want to emulate. Nobody do have I found their character to be virtuous and something that would inspire or encourage me. So you take the decadent morality, you take some of the language that's thrown into the mix, the partying, the drunkenness, it's adults behaving badly.
Yeah.
And for me, it went fairly fast, but it was a waste of time in many respects.
Yeah, you know, I'd like to just hop on to one thing that you said, that you really don't have anyone to root for. And I would agree with that. That really does reflect the book from what I remember. In this particular rendition, I do think that Baz Luhrmann, the director, he wants you to root for Gatsby.
Yes.
It feels like he's trying to sort of push you into Gatsby's position.
To find his story tragic.
Exactly. Right. And it is a very tragic story, but I think you're meant to really empathize with his love for Daisy.
Mm-hmm.
While sort of glossing over some of the bad things that he did in order to buy that huge house, you know, across the bay from Daisy's place, and even the fact that he's wooing this married woman. So in a way, I think that that's actually almost the movie's biggest problem for me, was that it really wants you to have a hero, even though we didn't find one.
Yeah.
You know, another part of the film that I thought was interesting was the fact that it was much more spiritual than I kind of expected it to be. I mean, you had that sort of the eyes of God represented by this big billboard with these large eyes that were from an old advertisement that sort of, they constantly go back to it and it's watching everything.
Yeah, Dr. Eckelberg. And I really found that interesting. It's a big part of the book. It's a big part of the movie, obviously. And I think it's even heightened a little bit in the movie. You hear people often say that God is always watching and you have these eyes just sort of staring down.
That the camera goes back to all the time.
Yeah, and when you think of the area in which the eyes sort of stare down, it's called the Valley of Ashes.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have some very sordid behavior that goes on in the Valley of Ashes that these eyes are always looking upon. And I think in some ways it's very spiritual, very convicting message. All these people are just loaded with wealth. They have a lot of advantages. They think they can get away with anything. And it seems like one of the messages that both the book and really heightened in this movie is that, you know, all the wealth can't hide everything that you do. You are being watched.
Right.
And I think that that's sort of a powerful message in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that potentially is the strength that people can find in a movie like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
But on the other hand, we still have to come back to the fact that if you walk into this film, there are content issues you're going to have to wrestle with.
Yeah, my favorite part is still the 29 Duesenberg that was highlighted.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It is 1925, and the 1929 Duesenberg wasn't invented yet.
But that was one of the more minor problems. Anyway, thanks, guys. And let me remind our ever-curious listeners out there that Paul's full review of The Great Gatsby is available at PluggedIn.com. Okay, now that we've had our fill of Gatsby and Dr. Eckelberg for one podcast, why don't we turn our eyes to another doctor, shall we?
Well, I just saved the world. The whole planet for about the millionth time, no charge. Yeah, shoot me. I kept the clothes.
Including the bow tie.
Yeah, it's cool. Bow ties are cool.
Doctor Who has been a fixture in Britain's BBC for, well, almost as long as Queen Elizabeth herself has. And he's been a cult fave here in the colonies for nearly as long. I remember watching the Afro'd Doctor Who from way back in the 70s.
Tom Baker.
Right. But now the show's getting a brand new audience via BBC America. So, Paul, tell us about this doctor and how it is that he's been practicing for so long.
Yeah, and he has been practicing for a long time.
I mean, it started back in the 60s.
That's correct. 1963 was the first episode, November of 1963. And, you know, it's almost unheard of to have a show that goes on that long. Now
because everyone would die off.
Well, exactly. And that's sort of the interesting thing about the BBC, how they've sort of gotten around that problem. Doctor Who is never actually called Doctor Who, obviously. He's just the doctor in the show. He is called a Time Lord. He comes from this planet, and he sort of zips around the universe, righting wrongs and saving people and talking with humans. And he does a lot of this stuff in time and space, and it's just a wild
and
show.
His mode of transportation is a TARDIS.
That is correct, which looks like an old-time London police box, which right. you don't actually see anymore except on Doctor Who.
Right.
And as a Time Lord, what the Doctor is able to do is he, when he gets close to death, he can sort of transfigure himself. He reincarnates himself, essentially, becoming a whole new person. Different look, different style, but he still retains all the memories of the old Doctors. And so we've gone through 11 Doctors,
wow.
all told.
Wow.
Incredible.
You know, I haven't seen the show in a long time,
mm-hmm.
But I'm sure things have probably changed quite a bit over the years. I mean, like, there's probably no spaceships hanging from strings
yeah.
anymore.
Yeah, see, I think I was introduced to Doctor Who about the same time you were. I watched some reruns of the old 1970s Doctor with the big old scarf.
And that's right.
And the special effects were just horrible. Horrible. Just horrible.
Well, they were so campy and cheesy, but you sort of went with it.
Yeah. And the special effects have definitely gotten better. It's interesting, actually, because back when Doctor Who first started off in Britain, there was a lot of talk, actually, that it was too scary. A lot of children were being scared mm-hmm. by that. A lot of groups actually said that it was just not suitable for kids, even though a lot of kids watched it.
So do the improved special effects make it scarier now?
Well, see, that's sort of an interesting thing. The improved special effects make it look more realistic. And there is still that fear that you still see in the show. Some of the bad guys that you see within Doctor Who, they can be pretty scary mm-hmm. for young people. Mm-hmm. And yet at the same time, I think it shows how far the television culture has come, at least, where you look at Doctor Who today and it feels very innocent. It still retains sort of its 1960s, 70s style of innocence.
So I'm hearing you say that you don't necessarily need to eat an apple a day to keep this Doctor away.
Well, yes and no. As you know, if you've been listening or reading us for any length of time, there is no such thing as a perfect television show or perfect movie. And so,
we're
of course,
so grumpy.
Yeah,
aren't we?
we've got a few gripes for Doctor Who as well. It embodies sort of a humanistic viewpoint. When you hear religion dealt with within the Doctor Who environments, it's not always in the most positive context.
Sure.
In this universe, you just don't find a lot of piety. I guess mm-hmm. is what you say. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes the worldview can be a little troubling. You also hear the occasional swear word, and there can be moments of violence.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the very fact that you're saying he's immortal and,
yeah.
you know.
Even that right on the surface is pretty problematic for some families.
Yeah. So a deal killer for families?
Well, it kind of depends on the family, I think. When you look at this, it doesn't feel like the worldview is actually that much different maybe from a Star Trek Next Generation, which also had some of those humanistic
sure.
tendencies.
Sure.
But a lot of Christian families were able to sort of embrace that show because they weren't overbearing. And I don't think you find in most episodes it being very overbearing in Doctor Who.
Especially in light of some of the positive themes.
Exactly. You still have sort of this heart of innocence. The show can be fun. It can be a little bit scary, but not terrifying. You know, it just has just sort of that niggling bit that just makes it kind of fun. So I think for a lot of families, this is one of the better shows out there.
Well, thank you very much, sir.
You betcha.
That's it for this official Plugged In podcast. My thanks go to BW and Paul, and of course our producer, Dave Sockheld, and our sponsor, Cedarville University. Please check out their website at cedarville.edu. We'll leave you with a clip from Beautiful Truth. It's the latest project by Christian musician Mark Roach. The song is called Holy Lord. I think you'll like it. Next week, Scotty will be beaming us back in with a review of the new Star Trek movie, Into Darkness. And I've already been warned by Bob Smithhauser that we'll be squaring off against one another in another pop culture pop quiz. I'll steal myself for that. And I hope that you can plan to join us then, because as we all know, it's not just entertainment.
The official Plugged In podcast is a production of PluggedIn.com and Focus on the Family.
Author of time, creator of all, the hand that paints every setting sun. Sparrows will fly and sparrows will fall. Your eye is on each and every one. And I long to know, I long to to flesh, water and wine, invisible guy in human form, strength to the weak and sight to the blind, your willing exchange, my